I guess I grew up on an older road.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 164 of the Hunting Collective. I'm Benjamin O'Brien, and we are joined, as always, by our trusty, the engineer, Phil. Phil, hello.
Hello, I'm trusty.
Yeah, you're trusty. Did you watch the Super Bowl?
I had it on in the background as I was in the kitchen for the entire game making Super Bowl style food. And by that, I just mean like greasy and grossly unhealthy. So I kind of saw it. I didn't watch the whole thing though. No.
No. So you were making Super Bowl food and missed the Super Bowl.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay. Makes sense. Makes lots of sense. Well, you're going to hear, this is kind of another inception. If you ever listen to our best of, we often get into going into the past to talk about the future. And we incept you guys a lot. Well, you're going to hear that this episode. I realized that in our Ask the Eagle segment with Giannis Patelis, that is what you're going to hear later on in this year program, I made a Super Bowl prediction. And you'll have to wait to see if it's right. Because now that we're airing this after the Super Bowl, boy, I think I'm going to sound pretty smart. I don't know, Phil. I don't know if you remember what my pick was.
I don't know. I'm halfway through editing the podcast now, and I haven't gotten there.
We made some picks there toward the end, and I'm not going to blow everything, but I'm a genius. I did a little betting. I did a little winning. I'm just gonna leave it there. It was very. It was a good night. It was a good night. My wife was not a fan of me getting into the betting. But now I'm going to give her for Valentine's Day an envelope full of cash written on the front will be the word spa.
That's another topic we get into in the podcast with Giannis is gifts for your wife. So, man, this is all coming together for you.
It's all coming together. And, you know, shout out to my dad who called me the other day. He's like, hey, I was listening to the podcast last week. And I heard that you're in marriage counseling. Do we need to talk about anything? And I said, we're good, Dad. It's the good kind of counseling.
No need to worry. I'm glad that you came out and said that, because I think it's important to normalize that kind of stuff, because it's very healthy. And I don't think people should be ashamed in any way.
It's kind of cool. So we talk about that a little bit too, because we have some marriage advice from the Ask the Eagle. So a lot of things are coming together rather unintentionally. But just so everybody knows, my marriage is absolutely fine. So in case you were wondering, in case you were worrying about us. So we're going to start off this little portion of the show. And this is so damn true. We had an emailer write in, and the title of the email, the subject line was Help, Ethical Dilemma, which I know you can't ignore. He basically called me out because he knew he was going to get on the show. He knew it. His name is Alec S. Since we're not doing last names, he listened. Alec S. He said, Ben and Phil, I hope all is well and your hate mail has since chilled out, which it has. I recently graduated with a degree in wildlife biology and just started a job in West Virginia with USDA Wildlife Services. In college, I spent extensive time researching what part of the wildlife field I wanted to go into, and I came to the conclusion that as an avid hunter and outdoorsman, wildlife services would be a good fit. As you know, this agency does a lot of lethal control of many different animals. As a hunter and cult member, I strive to use as much of every animal that I harvest as possible in my private time. My mental struggle emerges when it comes to what I do for work. We rarely utilize the animals we kill. Some states will donate certain animals, but West Virginia only donates some of the deer they kill to a local animal refuge to be used for feed. And there are reasons for that in which people at a much higher pay grade than me have decided. I struggle with knowing how many animals we as an agency kill and simply throw into the garbage. I know you and Clay discussed this some this past week with the Bears of California, but I'm looking for a little advice how to deal with this part of my job. Of course, these animals are being killed for a reason. That doesn't make the amount of waste easier to process in my brain. Alec S. Well, Alec, Phil, you want to try to take the outsider's view on this first before I jump in? Or would you like me to go first? You tell me.
I mean, I don't have a lot to say except that I think you obviously want to try to use as much as the animal as you can whenever you can. But also, I mean, that's not always possible. I would assume so. I mean, it takes a lot of work and manpower to process animals, and but I don't know. This is out of my knowledge zone. So Ben, I don't know if you have more info. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know necessarily I have info. A bit of a perspective. There are organizations like Hunters Feeding the Hungry, Hunters and Farmers Feeding the Hungry, a couple different groups that specifically gather venison and other types of edible game meat to donate to homeless shelters, to donate to any place that needs protein, any place that needs meat. So this does happen. This is something that I think we often overlook in the hunting space. I have a cousin who's on the local board of directors for one of these such groups, and I've talked to them and heard, you know, some of the challenges that they have and some of the ways that they need support. And really, I think the first step is to get this idea out there that hunters are already taking the onus on themselves to take meat either they're not going to use or they don't absolutely need, and giving it to folks that are going to need it through organizations like this. And so that is something that I think is ingrained in the hunting community already. I don't know if Alec even knows about these kind of groups, but that's something within the hunting community that we do and we should be, I think, more proud of and more vocal about than we already are, because there's just lots of ways that we can help buttress the hunting argument one way or the other. But this one is one that I don't think we've ever talked about on this show, and I don't think I've heard talked about very much around our company and just kind of like the overall lexicon of people talking about hunting. But again, I've read the APHIS impact report that comes out. The last one came out was from 2019. But if you don't know what APHIS is, it's the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service that's run out of USDA Wildlife Services. What do they do? Well, they do a lot of stuff, but they protect the health of U.S. agriculture and natural resources against invasive pests and diseases. One of the big things they do is they help people and wildlife coexist. So that's this cohabitation we often talk about with wildlife management. So it's a big part of it. For other work that we've done at this company, I've read this impact report and thought about it critically. So I have a little bit of experience with it, and I know what's in there. Certainly USDA itself, where you work, Alec, they list out their core values, and I'm sure that that's baked into your job. And one of them is responsible stewardship. They say we guard, conserve, and preserve USDA resources that taxpayers have entrusted to us. So really, they're looking at it from a resource management, and the resource they're talking about there, they listed out specifically, are U.S. plant and animal products. And so if you dig into the language in that impact report, which, like I said, is so interesting because it's just got a lot of, it just goes to show you the complexity of managing wildlife in our day and time. They say 440,000 responses to farmers, ranchers, and others requesting direct control or technical assistance to reduce the impact of predators on their animals. Just predators. That's just the predator part of it. And the way they shape that then is to say that we protect more than 15.8 million head of cattle, sheep, goats, and they're valued at over 2.5 billion. And we talked about this on the show. I had a bunch of wolves attacking cattle up in some public land where I elk hunt, and I got a bunch of that on trail cam. And I talked with the local rancher and the game warden, and they brought up bringing in APHIS trappers to come in and try to thin these wolves out. And so it's something that I've dealt with just as a hunter here in Montana. So it's not something that you would be immune to just as a regular hunter. You're going to run into this, whether it's wolves or anything else. And so it's something that we all need to be aware of. But I'd be interested for Alec to kind of tell us what he's seeing on the ground, because it does say in that same impact report that APHIS donates 138 tons of goose, deer, elk, and other meat. That's more than 1 million servings of protein for people in need. They're making full use of this resource. From the wildlife damage management work, which I'm sure is varied in its scope. So be interested for Alec to tell us kind of like what corner he is working in and what that looks like. Alec, you're in a better position than I just talking to a microphone. So keep us updated, man. Try to make some moves, because it would make me uncomfortable too if my job was to see that animals die and those animals weren't utilized. So keep us in touch, Alec S. Keep us in touch. So last week, we had a bit of a changeover the end of the, did we have a good idea about a billboard? Do you think it was a good idea? I thought it was a great idea. I was proud of it.
Yeah, it was an idea, but it seems like it's
son
not
of a bitch,
it's,
Phil. It's say not, it was a good idea.
It's not needed.
Give
right
me credit.
Now. It was a great needed. Idea, Ben.
It was
I'm
a great idea.
You.
So I had this great idea where we would use money, we would raise money via Cameo to buy a billboard in downtown San Francisco, and that billboard would be full of bear facts, and it would be close to Senator Wiener's office down there in San Francisco, so we could help educate folks, not to troll them or anything, but to really educate them. And the best way we knew how was just to go where they are. And that obviously didn't happen. By the time we were going to release that podcast, sorry, last week our podcast came out a little late, but we just wanted to amend it so as not to have you guys jump on Cameo, give us money for something we weren't going to do. That being said, Cameo is live. If you go to Cameo and you search Ben O'Brien, I will pop up. You can then get us to do whatever you want over there on Cameo. Me and Phil will do literally whatever you type into that machine, and we'll make a video for you. And it'll change your life, I think. Pretty sure. So go to Cameo. All the money that we raise there, and from now until whenever we cut that off, is going to go directly to the NWTF. So we are going to save the turkeys and really help save NWTF, because they are hurting. They have lost a lot of jobs. They had some layoffs. They told us recently that they stand to lose what to me is a shocking number of members without a banquet season this year. It's like 35,000. I know I have that right. That's a shocking number of members that they stand to lose over the cancellation of banquet season. And so we want to help them out all that we can. We're going to do some more stuff with First Sight later in the year. We'll help. We'll announce that as we push forward to turkey season. But we know we need to have the NWTF around. We need to have them strong and healthy so our turkey populations can be supported in the ways that they do. So that's that. But moving on more to the point of that billboard and a conversation I was having on social media now that I've returned to Instagram. I just took a couple months off. Now I'm back. It's great. It's fine. No big deal. I learned a lot. But now that I'm back there, I wanted to talk a little bit this last week about us versus them. Because when we celebrated, and I celebrated, the fact that they withdrew Senate Bill 252 last week, and there will be no, at least at this current time, push to ban bear hunting in the state of California. It was something that I celebrated, a lot of people around me celebrated, with just cause. But here's the deal. What happens in that celebration is we reconfirm the bias of us versus them. There's an us. People that listen to this podcast, people that love hunting, people that go on the internet and promote hunting, socialize the idea of hunting being a good thing for everyone. There's that group, and there's them. There's the San Francisco crowd who doesn't understand us and wants to ban everything that we do. And that again, as we talked about last week, spins back into what we talked about all the way back with Miles Nolte, and division in politics in our culture. It spins back to that in a lot of ways. And so what I wanted to say was there's an us versus them mentality, and there's no understanding how to grow us without reaching across to understand them, right? Like if we're just going to create this adversarial relationship with anybody that doesn't agree with us, we're never going to be able to create a place within the hunting community that's acceptable for everyone to enter. Whether they used to be anti-hunting and are converted, or they've always loved hunting and just wanted to get into it finally as an emergent hunter, not adult onset. No matter what the reason is, we've got to create the feeling that it's acceptable to disagree with us, but it's unacceptable to try to ban the things that we know to be productive for wildlife. So that's a tough balance. There's shades of gray, of course. But I got an email from our buddy Eric Jay out of Minneapolis. He goes by Progressive Outdoorsman. He writes in a lot. Thank you, Eric. I always enjoy your emails, even if we don't read them here. He said he enjoyed last week's episode with Clay Newcomb. And he said, I have to say that there wasn't near enough emphasis nor a strategic emphasis on the last point discussed under what people can do and educate non-hunters is the point he's making. The part about joining groups and getting ourselves educated is important. It's the first step. But the battle for the future of public support of hunting lies with the undecided, persuadable people. They tend to be urban and suburban, most likely left-leaning or centrist. They don't know hunters, or certainly not people close to them in their lives. They have an uninformed opinion. That is my milieu. Is that how you say that, Phil? That is my milieu.
Yes, I believe so.
That'd be it. Okay. I live there. That is who I am, except I'm a hunter and passionate about hunting. I can tell you the people I'm describing are persuaded by several points, but the absolute strongest point is that the meat is eaten and it's legally required for most species. Clay's points in regards to bear hunting are especially strong here, that everything is utilized. Number two, hunting is highly regulated. Number three, science supports hunting. It's needed for the environment. Number four, we bring a lot of money and political support to conservation. Lastly, a direct counterweight to the propaganda and lies from the state senator who introduced the ban. Mention that meat from hunting is very often low carbon footprint and sustainable in a world that is warming and may have trouble feeding us without destroying it. So while I think it's intellectually interesting that you go and talk to animal rights people sometimes, it's also a waste of time in terms of winning the issue. Another really important thing we can do is recruit more hunters from urban areas, especially hunters of color. Those populations are core of the liberal base in the U.S., and very low percentage of them hunt. But there's no lack of interest from those communities. And he goes on a little bit further, but I think that he makes the point there.
He's saying what I was thinking before you started reading this email, which is like one thing that you and Clay, what Clay kind of went off on, and he sounded really defeated at one point during your interview, was that like he has this thing where he says that we're arguing with just raw emotion. There's no facts or science. No matter what topic you argue on the political spectrum, there's always going to be an extreme point of view that will not be converted. But those aren't the people that you need to try to reach out to, which is exactly what this email is saying. And like there's these people that are somewhere in the middle that are either uninformed or don't care. So you give them reasons to care and you give them information, and you're never going to get people that are that far away. You just need to start reaching out to the people that you actually have a chance of connecting with.
Yeah, Phil, listen, man, I agree with you. I want to address, though, I don't want to move away from what you just said because I agree wholeheartedly, but I want to address what Eric said, specifically challenging that I talk to animal rights people sometimes, and that might be a waste of time on winning this issue. Now, look, there's a lot of things that is. We want to confront the idea at opposition, number one, and want to do that in a public forum so we can be seen calmly and collectively confronting what we might call a radical idea in our own space. That, as I've said just now, and I'll say again, hopefully creates everyone, or gives everyone a feeling that we're willing to confront these issues. And if having those same questions, which to a lot of people are obvious questions, and it's a simple one, why would you hunt bears? Pretty simple. That question can be taken from somebody on the extreme end, an anti-hunter we might call them, and played up on a political or social level, simply asking that question, charging that question, which is what State Senator Wiener did, and using that to push forward what seems to be logical legislation or logical moves to ban things. So I would say the people in the middle are connected to both poles, right? They're connected to hardcore hunters, and they're connected to hardcore anti-hunting vegans, animal rights activists. Only by that they're susceptible to the communication coming from both ends. So I want our communication to be as welcome as it can be, and to be as cogent and thoughtful and educational as it can be. That's it. I don't want to say like we maybe didn't talk enough about how to speak directly to those non-hunters, but I think that it's kind of baked in. Does that make sense, Phil?
Yeah.
Oh, that was easy.
Well, it's tough, Ben, because like, yeah, I agree with you. It's just, it's hard when the other side, and from like an outsider's perspective, it's hard when the why do you want to hunt bears argument, they have the high ground. And I don't mean that morally. I mean like strategically. It's way easier to to put that in front of people's faces and convince them than it is for hunters to do the same.
Yes. We could call that the populist high ground. Like they have the populist high ground. They do. Absolutely. We talked about that last week a little bit. That is very true. Something that we always should be thinking of. But I'll go back to, I flat out refuse, and some people just don't like me for this, and that's okay. Like I flat out refuse to create this narrative of us versus them and they're evil and we're good. It seems intellectually dishonest to me to not take this from like, I've done the research, I've thought this through, this is my position, but come with yours and let's argue it out. Let's debate it out. I don't want you gone. I don't want you off the face of the earth. I don't want you to be relegated to downtown San Francisco. I want you to come and hear my very thought out answer to your question. That's what I want, and I'll always want that, even if I firmly disagree, which in this case I absolutely do. So that's just how it is for me, and understanding, you know, what Eric is emailing in and what you're saying, Phil, definitely understand that. And I think that's kind of why we started this year program. So, because I was around a lot of non-hunters for a long time, and I answered these questions at every damn cocktail party I ever went to in Austin, Texas. So it was part of the reason I felt like it was necessary to get on board with a weekly podcast, all the work that entails. Before we get to Yanni, we got some really good entries for the THC theme song contest, sung by Kale Array, our good friend of the show. So we're going to give you guys another week, but to reiterate, we are crafting a new theme song for this podcast. That means the thing that plays in the beginning and at the end, and maybe even in the interstitial parts where we have ads and whatnot. This is all going to be strung together by Phil, the engineer for this show, and we're going to let you jump in and help us write it. So thc@themeateater.com. You got one more week. We'll get into next week what we want to do going forward. But you can write in and you can give us some words to sing to. And a lot of you have already done that. I could go down the list and read some names. Russell Edwards sent some pretty good ones in. Greg Smith, a bunch of things. Kelly Arth. I'm breaking our rule on last names and initials, but a lot of things already in there that are top of my list of things I'd like to try with Kayla. So get in there. You can be enshrined in THC history and help us with our new theme song coming up later this year. You excited, Phil? Excited? I just need your commentary on everything.
Yeah, no, I'm very excited for this, and I honestly can't believe that Kayla Ray is on board. I got to be
honest.
She's
into it. She's into it.
That's great.
Yeah, she's great. But a lot to get to today. We had fun with Giannis. This Ask the Eagle segment is about my favorite thing that we do. I think it's probably your favorite out there in listener land, just because we get to talk to folks like Eric Hall and Mike Peterson and a bunch of you guys that emailed in with questions for Giannis. It's a fun one. You know, after all the heavy topics we've been rolling through, after all the social and cultural divisions and things we've been talking about and banning this, it's fun just to answer questions, even though some of them did fall into those topics I just mentioned. So enjoy our friend Giannis Vitellas and Ask the Eagle. Okay, another Ask the Eagle, Giannis Vitellas. Before we call people, Giannis, we always have to just do a little bullshitting. We were talking earlier a little bit about dad noises. You make more dad noises than ever right now?
Oh, yeah.
They're increasing dad noises?
For sure.
Can you describe? Come on, man.
That's like a dad noise kind of thing there.
Yeah,
you know, the phone like, rings. You're supposed to have your phone turned off. It's not.
And it's not. That's kind of like, that's a dad thing. In church.
Go, come on.
I just noticed that your phone case is snow camo, which I got mixed feelings about that.
Well, someone else, Brody Henderson, once said, like, what's up with your phone case? Like, as if I was making a statement. And I said, it's like the one they had at the store.
Is there controversy surrounding snow camo?
I wasn't aware of it. I mean, I didn't purchase it as like, this looks cool. It was like the thing they had there and I got it. But Brody's like, what's up with that?
I think it's just interesting just to have a camo phone case in general.
In general.
And snow camo would be like the
lamest of those.
Like the most extreme version of camo that you could choose.
Yeah. It's like making a fashion statement with camo, which in our world is not a good thing to do. casual camo.
Yeah, imagine if I just was sitting here right now, Phil, and in fusion.
This is camo. Sure.
You'd be like, ah.
If he had a shirt on that looked like
and then
like
if
this.
I had a jacket on that was in that snow like camo, this. You'd be like, huh, what's going on today?
Yeah.
You know?
Where's he going?
Yeah. What's someone's birthday?
Yeah. Is he shooting like a James Bond movie in the Alps?
Exactly.
That's the only time I think of snow camos.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Now, plenty of predator hunters and snow yes, goose hunters,
for sure.
You know, do
for
the
sure.
do the whites to hide. But
yeah, no, I you know, I might have to change it now that I know that it's making people feel a certain way.
About you.
About me, yeah.
Yeah, there's a statement behind it. I don't know exactly what the statement is, yeah. But it's saying something about you.
If for me, it was like, what cases you have? They were like, one. And I was like, okay, I'll take it. And then I remember Brody bringing it up at some kind of a gathering. Like, really, guy?
Mm-hmm.
Snow camo, huh? Cool guy. Cool guy, huh? Big cool guy. Looking at big pants on Brad. All right. Well, we're here to the call. We have a reverse call-in show here on Ask the Eagle. And I'm proud of the listeners of this show and the fans of Giannis.
Hold on, Ben.
Yes, yes.
I sidetracked you with your phone case caller.
Oh, yeah,
because we were talking about dad noises. We really only have
Yeah, we really have only time for one tangent conversation. We should, like... I make more dad noises in not even in the things that you would expect. And like sitting down is I think an okay time to make a dad noise. But I make dad noises just like leaning forward 6 inches to start typing on my computer. I did that the other day. I was like, oh yeah, and just leaning forward. And I felt incredibly lame for doing that. Do you have what's your go to dad noise? You got one?
It's interesting that you're more aware maybe because I might do little shifts too and groan a little bit, but I don't notice them yet.
Yeah, getting out of the truck.
I had to be called out.
Getting out
of
the truck.
But when I get into bed,
yeah,
that's definitely like the end of the day.
Let's hear it.
Mega dad. I can't replicate it.
Can't do it.
It's some kind of a.
I wish we had a little bed in here that you could get into.
Yeah, sometimes I'll make an annoying dad noise like,
yeah.
But then I'll realize how insane it sounds and I'll turn it into a bit and I'll just like go even harder. Once I realize my wife is giving me the side eye and I'll just be like,
yeah, I do that a lot. Just to really love it. Yeah, I think getting out of the truck is probably my loudest dad noise these days. But if, for those of you out there that don't have children, you probably don't. I don't think you can physically make this noise unless you have offspring.
Oh, no, I think the name dad noise isn't like the proper title. It's just like close to 40 or over 40.
Over 40. It's like it's noise. An age thing.
Yeah.
All right.
Definitely more attributed to males, I think.
It is. My wife.
Males are afflicted by it more.
They are. Yeah. No, it's something that science has yet to discover the cause for. But maybe this podcast will spurn a new study to help us. But I would say that over the last, since I turned 35, my dad noises have tripled.
For sure.
Conservative estimate tripled. Yeah.
But now, like, if you're a, let's just say you're a Viking and you have to, like, slam through a door or, you know, move some giant block to save your family when the neighboring, you know, village is trying to burn your house down.
A Viking.
Like, you will grunt and roar to summon strength.
Yeah.
To do whatever you have to do.
Yep.
So, you think those two are kind of correlated?
Well, that's the sad part because I haven't moved to Boulder lately, and I'm still making those noises. I'm only making those noises.
No, I know, but you're like, my point is that you're summoning a little bit of strength.
Yes, to like move my knee, and I go, oh, or move my legs at the dinner table. Whoa! Yeah, that's...
Sedentary lifestyle,
yeah,
bud.
Sedentary lifestyle. Sometimes when I get out of the truck, I go, woo! Just like getting out of the truck was a big time decision, and
all of our ancestors are weeping for us.
Yeah, they're like, really, guy?
Yeah,
really? Had too many chips. I'll probably do that at the Super Bowl this coming Sunday.
I'm gonna make sure I get a run in today.
Yeah, just thinking about how sad this conversation is.
Speaking of Super Bowl, though, I am making Rotel dip. Are
What's
you familiar?
That? No.
Oh, buddy, you're probably familiar. You just don't know that it's called Rotel dip.
Rotel dip.
Yeah, just
so Rotel, right? It's like that's like the brand of
yes.
It's kind of like a pico de gallo, sort of. It's like
yes.
Tomatoes and chilies,
exactly.
And onions and stuff.
Exactly.
Okay.
You could probably get away with just doing like a block of Velveeta with a can of Rotel, and you could call it Queso.
Queso, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Rotel dip, if you punch it in and look for a recipe, adds one more ingredient, which is usually
squirrel
ground beef.
Oh,
which is like with like taco seasoning.
I was gonna say like maybe like I think refried beans would be good.
I grew up eating this. We just never called it that. Yeah, for sure. It's you know when it the thing about this kind of dip is when it cools, it looks it's the grossest looking thing ever.
Yeah,
it gets a film on the top like ice fishing where you got to go through the top layer to
it's
get
got a matte finish.
Yeah,
I have a really mini crock pot, and the only thing I think I'll ever use it for. Maybe I'll come up with another reason to do it, but yeah, I put my
and you
got to
keep
dip
it warm. Can't get that on film low. On the top because then it's a sad looking thing. Yeah. It looks like vomit.
So I was kind of surprised, you know, my wife and her sister, they're pretty healthy people. And I was told yesterday that those two are very excited about Rotel dip showing up for the Super Bowl party.
If there's anything that there's anything that sports culture encourages us to do is just be sit on our ass and be fat. Like
Wings, beer, sports.
Every commercial during it is like, do you need it's like laxatives and antacids and meatballs?
Uh-huh.
Is all.
Yeah, and fellas that look a little more rotund.
A little bit.
Than the three of us.
Yeah, yeah. We're svelte. Although my body's falling apart, obviously, based on dad noises. But yeah, I'm going to make the dad noise of dad noises when I'm done eating. My wife was telling me what she was making. I'm going to just make like some, you know, a little probably smoked pronghorn. We'll do a little some sort of dip, maybe an au jus or something. I don't know what I'm going to do. Something cool. Maybe some naan bread.
Like a French dip style
Yeah,
thing.
I do this thing. It was like naan bread. And then it's like a little pita bread type of thing. And then you just put some shaved.
Naan, like N-A-A-N.
Exactly. And then you put a little shaved smoked meat on it, put some finishing salt, and then you dip it in this like au jus.
Ooh.
It's really good. So I might make that. There's also sometimes horseradish involved. But we should call some people. We got a lot of. Last time we upset a few people that we didn't call. So this time I want to try to get through everybody.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, but I didn't put that guy on the list.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, our apologies. We ran out of time.
Yeah, we ran out of time. So we don't run out of time this time. But I just like talking to these folks, and so we'll see how it goes. But first up, Phil, do you remember the guy, as I dial here, do you remember the guy that shit his pants in Key West?
No, of course, yeah.
Yeah, of course. This is that guy, Mike Pugh. Hopefully.
Shit his pants in Key West.
That's how he introduced himself in the email.
That's so a Jimmy Buffett B-side he never released.
B-side.
I shit my pants in Key West.
But this is Mike.
Hello?
Mike, this is Giannis, Ben, and Phil T. Engineer. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Hey, guys. What's going on?
Good. Phil, you want to turn him up a little bit? Can we hear him?
Yeah, how's that? Hello, Mike. Can
we get give me a
test audio?
Give us a test.
All right. How's that sound?
That sounds pretty good.
That's better.
That's better. You good with that, Phil?
Mike, when you're in the business, the best way to test is you just tell everybody what you had for breakfast.
Exactly. So.
All right. Well, I had three eggs, a bowl of oatmeal with some cinnamon.
Whoa.
A little bit of raspberries and some walnuts crunched up on top.
Wow.
That's Mike, a breakfast.
Impressive.
Very.
I forgot to have breakfast, and now I'm hungry. I'm very hungry.
I'd be going lion hunting if I had a breakfast like that.
I know. I might be taking a nap if I had a breakfast. That's lovely.
You move a boulder and make some Viking sounds.
Mike, Mike, you're a dad, right? I remember from your not-so-sharp moment, you're a dad?
Yes, sir.
Do you make dad noises?
Absolutely. Anytime I get up from the couch or, you know, up or down from the couch, I think it's kind of one of those things. Sometimes I like to make an extra loud grunt noise anytime I have to pick up anything like minuscule, like a paper towel or something.
Yes.
Lean over to pick up a Lego or two.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll just be like, ah.
Yeah. Ah. Yeah. That's we're realizing that like our caveman ancestors would be so sad to hear this. Hear this conversation because I make it just walking down the hallway or just like one time I was sitting at dinner and I just like kicked my legs out a little bit more and I made that noise.
Just trying to straighten your leg out a little bit extra.
Yeah. And I don't even have knee, but my knees are perfectly healthy.
But at the dinner table though, you have the compounding factor of having a full belly. And I think if you have a full belly, it just makes every movement
Absolutely. I haven't gotten to the noise. Point yet where I need to undo the top button. So I'm pretty lucky there, but absolutely. Full belly movements require some sort of sound effect.
Yeah, like an expanding and contracting of the diaphragm, maybe. Maybe there's a scientist listening that can tell us what's going on.
Man, it sounds soft, but I tell you, the cure for dad noises is yoga.
Yoga. Dude, I'm fully in. Like, I hurt my back ice fishing, which is an awful thing to say out loud. I had to carry the auger like maybe 100 yards down a hill, and I hurt my back.
Okay.
And that's it. I hurt my back. I don't even know what happened. And I had to like pick up a perch out of a hole. That was it. And I'm injured. So anyway, Mike, we never are on time with this program. So we got to get to it. We got to get to your question. I'm going to go ahead and let you ask the question. But Yanni, just to preface, Yanni already talked to his wife about this last night in bed, I think. Right, Yanni?
I did.
He did. So Yanni's got some real dope for you. So go ahead and shoot your question out there.
All right. So when I asked the question, I think it was like back in October.
Yeah.
And I was getting ready to go. I have a public lands hunt that I do up in North Florida, and it's over my birthday and Halloween. So my wife is always very cool with me going hunting and fishing with my buddies. She never gives me a problem. But I was wondering if you had a suggestion on, maybe like a small token appreciation, like a small gift or something that I could give my wife just to kind of ease it, because you feel guilty leaving home. I know you guys have talked about it on the show before. But you leave and you go on these trips with your buddies and you're having a blast and the wife is at home dealing with the kids. So, you always feel a little guilty. There's always like a little bit of homesickness that goes along with that. And I was just wondering if you had any suggestions on something I could give to my wife just to, show my appreciation and make the trip a little bit easier. It's, I guess saying it out loud, it sounds like it's more for me than it is for her. But, I just would like to give her something.
But do you guys know about the push gift? Did you guys ever get your wife?
No, please.
I heard about this for the first time like 3 months ago, and we've had two kids.
So. I heard about it after we had kids, and I was a little disappointed in myself for I didn't realize it was such a big deal.
Don't worry, Mike. Don't worry. That's the thing a normal guy doesn't do. A normal guy. So like a push gift is a gift, and it's usually an extravagant gift that you get your wife after she gives birth to your child. You know.
Right.
Yanni's got like a dead stare. Looking
is the push an acronym?
No, pushing the child out.
I see.
Yeah, so it's kind of a bit of a gruesome name, push gift, but that's what they call it. And people will ask you, like mostly old ladies would ask me, like, "What'd you get for a push gift?" I was like,
"So this thing's been around.
This happens
apparently.
There's like it's a thing that people do. I feel like it's a thing that like normal folks just don't do." I think it's an elitist. Yeah, it's elitist.
I agree with you. I'm going to agree with you on that. I think we should all agree on that.
It's elitist.
I feel like the gifts, Mike, are it's the easy way out.
Oh, okay.
I agree with that.
Because the push gift, too, I could see it like, well, I just got her those new diamond earrings. And listen, it's not my wife's style, and I can't afford those, so I've never done it, so I really don't know what the reaction would be. But I could see that I just got out of those diamond earrings, and so now I don't really feel like I need to change as many diapers or get up in the middle of the night as much because I kind of paid her off. And I think that the little gift thing before a hunting trip or after a hunting trip could kind of be taken the same way.
Mm.
And
okay,
I can just tell you that for me personally, before talking to my wife last night, who just cut me off with the answer, I didn't even get to finish the question. She knew what I was getting at.
Jennifer.
But is that in general, I just try to hustle. And like we had to pick up our kids and drop them off at school, right? So there's no bus service.
Right.
So that really cuts into people's work days. And so when I'm home, I try to be the one that does that. When I'm home, I try to be the one that goes to the grocery store. My wife also doesn't like to do that. Just try to help out as much as possible. And anytime I'm like feeling lazy about, doing something around the house, I'm like, that's right. I'm going to be gone for 100 days this year. I should probably hustle and get her done. So I just think that just, you know, hustling. And another thing is I push my wife to do things on her own and with her friends as well while I am home. And that's not necessarily right. to make me feel good, because I know that it does help her out. Yeah. But she sometimes I think is so unselfish that she like just will not think of herself first, you know? And so I have to be like, look, I've got these, I'm thinking about going mountain lion hunting on Sunday. I said this yesterday. Like, I've got these like tentative plans, but if you tell me that you make plans to go on a hike with your sister or whatever, like, I'm canceling. Right. You go and do your thing, you know? But if nothing's going on, I'm out.
So Yanni's suggestion is be a good spouse all the time. That's yeah. a lot. I mean, that's a lot. It's a lot of work. But I think you can do it.
But yeah, but I yeah, think but
that's, that's actually sounds probably like the best course of action. I yeah. mean, yeah. you know.
It's cheaper.
That sounds like, yeah, yeah, it's cheaper. It's the way, it sounds probably like the way to go, though.
Let me just say, I would just bribe her with some sort of gift. That's way, then you could be lazy 100 days a year. You know, be like, yeah, I'm going to go hunting. You stay home with the kids.
Yeah. Right. Now, Jennifer's answer, like I said, before I even got to the end of the question, was clean the whole damn house, especially the bathrooms.
Yep. Yep.
Right.
I feel like you're just trying to see what you'll do. You know, it's like see what she can
yeah, maybe.
Get you to do. All right. Well, Mike, is that helpful?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, hearing it from Yanni and thinking about it now, I mean, that sounds like a much better course of action yeah. than trying to bribe her with some sort of, you know, some sort of gift or token. I mean, she would probably much, she does a lot. I mean, she, you know, we got two kids. I work a lot and stuff. So she does a lot anyways. And it would probably be just helpful in general if before I left, you know, I did some stuff around the house, made sure everything mm-hmm. was squared away before I left, instead of, you know, leaving in a hurry like what happens so often, you know?
Yeah. Well, this will be the second episode in a row that I brought up our marriage counselor. My wife and I go to marriage counselor. His name's Doug. Shout out to Doug. He's probably listening. And Doug and I were talking about, like, what's a marriage for? Like, what's my role in a marriage, right? And I just said, hey, you know, listen, I think what I used to think when I first got married was in a relationship that some part of the marriage was there to make me happy. But what I realize now is like my role is to make the marriage work. Like I shouldn't expect anything from the marriage other than my part of it, which is to make my wife happy and make it work. Like that's my earlier expectation was, well, you know, this relationship should make me happy somehow. But I like lately, I'm like, no, that's not it. It's never going to work if I think like that.
I agree with that.
So shout out to Doug for that guidance and advice. I might have Doug come on and do like a segment, because last week we had an email from some folks that were telling us that THC has kind of helped their marriage, and this week we're giving more marriage advice, and we have Dr. Phil. Phil, do you want to comment on this?
Well, no, I mean, I agree with Yanni. And one thing to point out, too, is like, I know this isn't the case with everyone, but like my wife and I share a bank account. So when I go out and I buy her a gift, she's kind of appreciative, but she's like,
sand to the beach.
Cool, you sand took to my beach. Money to buy me this thing that I could have done myself. Whereas doing chores or thinking of like making dinner for the entire week before you're gone or the week after, like just... That's the stuff that she, my wife, like will notice and appreciate more than me going out and buying her something that she could have done herself.
Yeah, well, my wife's birthday, I bought her, she turned, I won't give her age up, but I bought her the number of roses that was her age. Mm-hmm. And it was cool, but it didn't have anywhere near the impact of me just like taking her ice skating with the kids. Like actually doing something to show that I was thinking of her. So I was like, man, I wasted $200 on those roses. I could have just...
Oh man, flowers! I was gonna actually mention flowers because I personally enjoy them. I think you know, vase full of flowers brightens up the room, brightens up your day. But we went and got just a small bouquet for my wife's birthday recently, and I was out like I think $60.
Yeah. Well, my dad for 45 years ran Ben's Flower Shop, Hagerstown, Maryland. He's now retired.
Yeah, one of my wife's first jobs is at a florist, and anytime I get her flowers, she gives me like a little look of you know, disappointment. She's like, I can't believe you spent all this money on this.
No, there you go.
They're just gonna die.
Yeah.
All right.
Nah, she likes them. She likes them sometimes. So, but it's still like, ah, I can't believe you did that.
All right, Mike. Well, hopefully we helped you. And
yeah.
Please keep us when the spring comes around, if your turkey on, or the fall comes around, you let us know how it's going.
Yeah, absolutely.
Please keep that marriage.
Absolutely.
Please keep the marriage hot and let us know.
Sounds good, guys. I appreciate you guys giving me a call, man. This is awesome.
Oh, no problem, man. Have a good day, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care, Mike.
You too.
See you, Mike.
Hello?
Mike, this is Giannis. Well, this isn't Giannis. This is Ben.
This is Giannis.
That's Giannis. And then there's Phil.
Hello.
Say something, Phil. We're going to check your sound here. It says good. Tell us what you have for breakfast so we can check your sound.
Eggs, cinnamon rolls, and bacon.
Jeez.
Wow.
Man.
Hearty breakfast.
Yeah.
From these people.
Everybody we call has awesome breakfast.
Yeah, the guy just before.
I got a pregnant wife at home, so I got to do lots of cooking in the morning.
Got it.
Look at this guy.
This guy, too, man.
Solid.
We got a lot of good husbands in the THC world here. I love it. I figured it'd be that way, Mike. We just got off a call with another Mike who was asking us about what to do to make his wife happy so he could leave to go hunting in the fall.
And feel good about it.
Feel good about it. And so we just said, be a good husband all the time. Sacrifice for your lady friend.
Start.
So when's the baby due, man?
Right now, April 14th is our due date. So coming up here.
Oh, man. Well, you're going to have, you have any kids now? Is that your first one?
No, this will be the first. It's a boy. Already prepped. I got the nursery done and trying to keep everybody happy.
That way, nesting. It's going to be, it will be different for hunting. That's for sure. I know this is what.
Oh, yeah. Well, my turkey season is the week before he's due. So I'm hoping he holds out.
Oh, yeah. If he gives you like at least a couple days turkey hunting. In before he comes, and at least he'll come over the summer. We always have this argument around here, like you shouldn't have a kid during the fall. My first son was born in October, and the second one in January. Mike, you have some questions. You wrote three questions in. Give us the one that you feel like is the most impactful. Pick it.
I think I got that one right here. If I had to pick one, my question to you guys and Giannis, both as individuals and for Meat Eater as a company, as a hunter and conservationist, environmentalist, as well as a lot of times kind of a two-way side of things, how do you guys go about making decisions at the polls when, unfortunately, a lot of these issues tend to go on either side of the political aisle?
Yep, that's a good one. Yeah, you want to take that one first? Or do you want me to go? I've answered this a lot, so I got...
You have?
Yeah, I got a lot.
You got a spiel already
dialed.
I
got a lot of dope, yeah, on this one.
I mean, it's not hard for me. It's like I'm a issue by issue voter, and we interviewed an author by the name of Michael Punk on the Meat Eater podcast, who wrote the book The Revenant, and we got to talking to him. And I don't know if he introduced himself as such, but at some point he described himself as an extreme centrist, and that really stuck with me. And I'm like proud to walk around and carry that badge, and to know that like. If I was to share like my voting record, you'd be like, yeah, this guy's kind of all over the place. And I'd be like, well, yeah, it's because for these issues, I vote this way. And these issues, I vote that way.
Yep. I shared who I voted for. And that was fun for me, for everybody to pile on.
I enjoyed it.
From the side, those are how many people voted for Biden? 78 million voted for one, 74 for the other. So either way, you're going to have 70 some million people.
That's
liking
right.
You. I think about it in the same way. I mean, I'm obviously try to be pragmatic and in the center. I would say I'm right of center in my political leanings is what I would say. I almost always would side with folks on the right, on the conservative side, certainly socially. But when it comes to the environment and it comes to hunting and fishing, I probably lean way left in terms of what I'd like to see if I'm just trying to put my views into the buckets that we've developed in our country. So I know that, and Mike knows this since I'm sure you've listened to me talk about this, that when you go to the polls and you have to vote one side or the other, each side has lots of drawbacks in terms of what my value set is. I want the Second Amendment. I'm a strong supporter of the Second Amendment, but I'm also a strong supporter of reasonable extraction and taking care of our environment and want to see us address climate change. So both those things don't fit into one bucket. So I don't know if I, like, I don't know personally if I can give anyone advice on how to make those decisions, but you just got to weigh those options and determine. I've had, like I said on this show before, I've had people who really were really right-wing tell me that our public lands are not under threat. Like, you're overblowing the threat to public lands. And I've had people on the left tell me that I'm overblowing our threat, the threat to our guns and our gun rights.
Mm.
So it seems as if either side would like to convince you that their threat is more important than the other. And so I think that's probably the biggest struggle that I've had, just to try to suss out, like, what really is going on. Even though I know the issues on both sides, a lot of times you can vote different. One piece of advice I guess I could give is a lot of times you can vote different in your state than you do on a federal level, or different in a regional state politics. So you can really protect your rights a little bit more.
Yeah, you have a lot more impact. I was talking to Rachel, I think it's Schmidt now.
It is, yeah.
It's probably been that way for a while. I just didn't know that. But you know Rachel Schmidt?
Of course.
Friend of yours.
Great.
And she was just telling me and making some good points about how we should all be more involved on a local level, because you can actually make a difference there. And there, you can make such a difference that maybe you could, if it's that important to you, you could still kind of stay on that side of the aisle that you prefer, but you could change those people's point of view to closer to your point of view. So you wouldn't necessarily have to like vote the other direction to like get what you're getting at. You can just go and like talk and send letters and emails, and maybe your side is like, oh, you know what? Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah. When I look at, I don't know if you went through this, Mike, when you voted, but when you get to the voting booth, like, you're like, well, something's going to suffer here, especially when you're voting for the president. Something's going to suffer here when I make this here choice. And you just kind of got to decide.
Mike, is there like a thing that happened that like causes you to like worry and think about this, or like how does this manifest itself in your personal life?
I mean, I feel that like obviously with this presidential race, this question's more general all the time, because the presidential race was so one-sided, depending on one way or the other. You were going to like the guy or hate the guy either way. But on a general level, I have quite a few senators that I've reached out for different things with BHA and gotten disappointing answers, like Land Water Conservation Fund and things like that, as those things were going through. And that really kind of pushed me to question some of those voting practices of just saying, hey, right-sided or left-sided, as well as I've gotten involved at the state level, trying to push my own bills and some of those things with representatives. So I'm trying to get more involved in how to make those decisions and just think through that process.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing other than really holding your local representatives to account, you know, especially the representatives on a state level, hold them to account. I mean, we've seen this in action with Jason Chaffetz some years ago in Utah, when they had some, anti-public lands bills that really it was our group of people who went to him and said, this is not going to stand. Like, this is not the kind of legislation that anywhere in our country.
Oh, it just happened with the bear ban in California.
Perfect
example.
The next example, right? So if anyone out there, and I think it also happened with the Great American Outdoors Act on a positive side for what we all supported, where we all voiced our support for it, and it was truly a bipartisan effort to protect the things that, and fund, really, in that case, fund the things that we care about. So
it was great to see a win in California. I lived out there during the hound hunting ban and some of those times, and it seemed like a no-win situation for sportsmen out there.
Yeah, I talked to a couple of local reporters and kind of and some folks that are involved in that, and really that they felt like there was one thing I did know some years ago, a bill to ban dove hunting that had a similar fate as this bear hunting ban.
Well, I believe in Michigan it's still banned, dove hunting.
Is it?
For no other reason that like doves are, you know,
peace.
Peace bird.
We're on shaky ground in a lot of ways, right, with the stuff we like to do. So we just have to be vigilant and sometimes just pick your battles, man. Like, just know this is the thing I'm going to fight for in this short term. And then 2 years from now or 4 years from now, I'll have a chance to go back and reassess where we are and try to shift focus if I need to in terms of how I vote.
Yeah, absolutely.
Never going to be simple. Well, thanks, dude. I appreciate it. And I am going to, I'm not going to tell anybody why I'm saying this, but I'm going to join a convent and I'm leaving Meat Eater, Michael.
Well, I can't wait to see which one. Hopefully it lets you podcast.
You think they will? All right. Well, I'll wear whatever outfit I need to. And it's all, I just owe a penance to Mike. I'm not saying any more about it publicly, but I owe Mike so much. I might have to just come hunting with you or something, or like buy you, like get you out here to Montana again and get you a tag or something. All right, Mike. Thanks, brother.
See you, Mike.
Yeah. Appreciate it, guys. Have a good one.
Bye.
Hello.
Is this Matt?
Yes.
Matt, Ben O'Brien, Giannis Patelis, and then Phil T. Engineer. What's going on, buddy?
Oh, nothing much. How's it going?
Good. We're over here fielding questions. Are you in Virginia?
Yes.
Harrisonburg, Virginia. What's your favorite thing to hunt out there? What do you do most time? What do you want to hunt the most out there in Virginia? I always wonder about my side of the world there.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of course whitetail hunting around here. There's some good turkey hunting. I'm actually really interested to get started into bear hunting.
That away. You got some big bears down there these days. North Carolina, you go a little south, you get some really big corn-fed bears.
Well, and actually, the county I live in has the highest bear kill each year for bear season.
That's right.
We got quite a population here in the area.
We've been talking about bear hunting a lot here lately because of California. But in the conversation that we had last week, one of the things that Clay Newcomb said that got me thinking the most was that of all the animals that he knows, game animals that we hunt, he thinks that we use the most from the bear. Like every time I kill a bear, I think about taking the hide. We use the fat and we use the meat. You know, from a whitetail, we don't necessarily use the first two things.
Yeah, but come on now. Use is kind of a strong term for that. When's hide.
Okay. Even take the hide away, at least the fat is universally resourceful.
Yeah,
right?
And nobody's, I mean, unless you're Remy Warren, you make a couple candles, nobody's doing much.
Yeah.
Or you're Jake Bull, the chiropractor, and you made some chapstick with your deer tallow.
With your deer tallow.
But you don't, you know, a little bit goes a long way there.
That's true. There's some deer tallow soaps and things I've seen out there in the world. But those are like artisan stuff.
Yeah. Like, now, if all of a sudden like half the Meat Eater crew was like sleeping under a bear blanket, I'd give you that point. But right now, just because we all pack them out and tan them and hang them on the wall, it's like, I don't know if that qualifies as use.
I was picturing everyone under one bear. When you were talking about that, like a bunch of sardines. Yeah.
Yeah. Right, well, when we go on a shoot. Matt, I want to know what methods of take or in pursuit are legal there in Virginia for bear hunting?
Archery muzzleloader, modern rifle.
Yeah.
What about bait and dogs?
Oh, dogs are legal. Bait is not.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that because they had the big controversy about dogs for deer in that part of the world as well. Yeah. We talked about that some episodes ago. Yeah, it's always funny that how we carve up bear hunting that way. You know, well, I guess we carve up deer hunting and others that way. Some states have legal baiting, some states are not.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we carve up a lot of pursuits in that way with ethics and regulations.
What's going to be the way that you chase them?
I'm going to go modern firearm first off. But actually today I just picked up a bow off of somebody they're getting a new one for their birthday. And so they were going to sell their old bow. And so I figured I'm going to try to get into archery hunting. So I'm going. Got to use bow off of a guy today.
Nice. That way. So your question that you had, go ahead and ask it. I won't ask it for you.
So the main thing is tips on kind of getting started on that conversation of finding a hunting mentor and or talking to folks about getting onto their private land for hunting. This is. I don't want to go. I know Giannis. He likes the shorter questions there. So we'll just kind of go with that. So I won't go into the whole backstory I did in the email.
Giannis,
you want tips on how to find more folks to hunt with or find a hunting mentor.
Yeah, and also like possible private land to use because while I have public land out here, I mean, I'm 20 minutes away from the national forest. It it's a little bit harder to hunt than, you know, some of the private land. We don't have as much of the public land access as you guys do out west.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man. I've done very little public land hunting east of the Mississippi. And every time I do, I think, like, boy, aren't we lucky living out west. And, man, if you had to get this done out east, I'd be a better hunter. But let's just start off there, the private land. Our new CEO, actually, Dan.
The Chumbler.
Yeah, he
Dan the man.
Was telling me about his system for getting on some private land when he was living in Minnesota. And, man, he crushed it. Like, he was kind of sad to leave Minnesota to come to Montana because I think he was up to, like, 12 or 13 permissions or something like that.
Damn.
Yeah, the guy had, like, 60 prepped trees for saddle hunting.
Yeah, the Chumbler.
Yeah, exactly.
We got to have him on the show.
Yeah, this guy, I'm like, I don't know if you can, if you're the CEO, I don't know if you're allowed to come on these podcasts, but you should.
You should.
If he says yes.
Official invitation, if he's listening.
But that's like, it makes me feel good about working for a company whose CEO has got 60 trees prepped.
That's right.
And my numbers might be off. This is a while ago, we talked about it. But anyways, man, that guy took like a CEO's mentality to you know, getting his permissions and just went all out and had basically a form letter that he would tweak, you know, per, you know, landowner. And just went after it with just connections and what's the word I'm looking for? Like when you go out and putting his feelers out, but
networking.
Thanks, Phil.
That is the word.
My brother-in-law just took a new job. He's going to be traveling the state of Montana selling kitchen equipment to like big commercial type kitchens, like if a hospital, you know, needs, you know, to build out their kitchen, whatever. And I was like, man, you know, being a traveling salesman might not be the best thing, but dude, think about the people you might meet, you know? And now we were thinking of ways to like kick off hunting conversations that might get his foot in the door just to even like open the conversation. I was like, man, if I were you, if I was in like duck hunting country and there's not much elk hunting out there, I'd be wearing a like a lapel pin with a goose or a duck on it. Just something, maybe a baseball cap, you know, depending on how casual he dresses. He dresses.
Okay, I'm with you. The baseball cap, the pin,
pin. Yeah. You don't think that's going to do
people
it?
People just don't wear lapel pins. Who do you see walking around, like politicians?
Well, yeah, but see, my brother-in-law is the kind of guy that's going to stroll in wearing
a
jacket.
Okay,
yeah,
got it.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
makes more sense. Okay.
So, but yeah, so that way you're not like coming in there and trying to do business and then also being like, hey, by the way, you know, I noticed around here you guys got a lot of geese flying around. Do you know anybody? But, you know, at least there's a conversation starter so someone can be like, hey,
I like that.
You like Canada geese?
That actually works out for me pretty well because, like, our Department of Wildlife Resources, they've done these hats that have, like, vintage hunting stamps on them.
Yeah.
And so I have one for a bear stamp and I have one for a deer stamp. So, you know, wearing those when I have those conversations and kind of get that started.
That's very literal, but I love it.
Yeah.
It's like, wear the hat of the thing you want to hunt and you will manifest. Yep.
As if it's some like secret Illuminati symbol. Like,
you will manifest. If you wear just a bear sweater and bear underwear and bear socks, you will manifest bear hunting opportunities in private land.
And I think, just remember this, Spencer talked about it not long ago on one of the podcasts, that like he, I think, tried well over 10, like double-digit properties this year in Montana and got shut down on each one. So just keep in mind that like you might have to ask 20 times to get that one yes, but that one yes is, if I was to weigh it out right now, I'd say, well, what is it worth? How many times would I go ask people? I'd say 50. Just for one yes? I mean, if it's like a, you know, 40 acres, you know, I'm probably not, I don't know, maybe it's worth it in Virginia to call for a guy with 40, but like, if you had 200 acres to yourself and it took you 50 asks, buddy, I just start calling right now and start checking off the no's, you know?
Yeah. I always would, if I'm hunting a piece of public ground and there's private ground that borders it and I see a rancher out running cows on his private ground, I'll wave him down and be like, hey, what's the deal with the elk around these parts? And get talking to them and just ask them questions. Like, they're on here all the time. And then you can be like, hey, if you've ever need anybody to do any work, I'm happy to come and do some work. I'm always hunting up here. It'd be cool to also have access to this. I'm always right over. I'm always hunting the border of your place. It'd be nice to be able to have that too. So that's,
you got
to
be thinking positive, because as much as you hear all the doom and gloom about how all the outfitters have leased everything up and everything's being, you know, leased up by, you know, private groups of dudes with, you know, all the surgeons and doctors have their leases on all the private land. There's still plenty of stories.
Oh,
like this one I just mentioned, Dan. With, I don't think he was paying for a single one of them.
Yep.
And he had, you know, a dozen or so yeses.
You're
so.
Generally looking for generational ownership of land. Like my daddy's farm, right? Because a lot of times the newer landowners are buying it for the exclusivity, right? Somebody that has a lot of money that buys a place, they're generally not looking to bring other people on. But folks who are just, you know, normal folks that just have their property. I mean, Doug Duren comes to mind as somebody who has a, you know, family land. It's not his land, it's his family's land. And his idea that he's talked about on this show before about game cooperatives, which him and I talk about all the time, which is just offer to do some work. You know, just be like, I'll come here and work. Aldo Leopold had the Riley Game Cooperative, and that's basically what it was. It was just people coming to work, and then it got so interesting that they started bringing in folks from the college, and it became kind of a small community thing. So it can, if you can get lucky, you might stumble into something real cool in terms of like who you know. And then I know, Matt, your other question was kind of around mentoring. You might be able to find somebody in that, you know, in that circle that can also help you understand, you know, the best way to go about some of the new hunting you're going to undertake.
Yeah, man, I see in your email, Matt said that he already belonged to BHA and a couple other conservation organizations. But with your interest in bear hunting, I think I would find the Bear Hunting Association. Looks like there's a Virginia Bear Hunters.
Hell yeah.
Go join those boys.
I'm starting to
tell them you're interested, man. And if they're at all like trying to keep this whole bear hunting thing, and especially since you guys can use hounds, like they need people to be pro this thing. And even if you might be a little uneasy about it, a lot of people are with just like the chasing of game with hounds. I was. Now I'm the proud owner of a hound dog, and I love it. And I want to be a spokesperson for it because it's so great. And it's just one of those things that you don't know until you go. And man, I couldn't believe that if you went there and, you know, you joined up with them and hooked up with them, that you wouldn't find somebody that would take you to the woods. And even if you're not into like, you know, shooting a bear out of a tree after a hound chase, that like just going and learning that is going to make you a better woodsman. And you're going to get into the woods, get into places that you've, you know, haven't been before. And I can guarantee you that anybody that's, you know, running bears with dogs probably also knows something about hunting whitetails and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. This gets me thinking about the game cooperative idea, really. You know, we need some, like, official system to get people to connect landowners and hunters, I feel.
Yeah.
I think that would be a great, especially in the digital age, I feel like that would be a great resource to have people say, I'm willing to work, and people say, I'm willing to let you work for hunting opportunities. And then make that a thing for folks. So that's the owner of that idea is our man Doug Duren. But I believe that to be something that we can do as a community. So maybe in the future you'll have kind of like a Zillow for this, where you can go and click on a little a little dot on a map, and it can be, hey, if you do this, I'll let you do this, and you can call that person up, connect with them, go do it. So maybe in the future one day. Does that help, Matt?
It does. And I mean, and yeah, something like that would be great. Cause I mean, you know, like I mentioned, my background in the scouting movement, I'm not afraid of any conservation work cause I've done plenty of it, you know, so helping somebody on their land is not a problem.
Well, it sounds like you're doing all the right stuff. You know, like you said, you volunteer for Boy Scouts of America there locally, and TU and BHA and IWLA, you know, all those are places, you know, if I was just starting out in all this, those are places where I'd look to find mentors and hunting buddies and build myself. Because I'm telling you, man, hunting alone is great, but having a group of people that you share that value system with, you talk about, you trade, I mean, it's so much better that way. So that's, I'm sure, a big part of it for a lot of people that are hunting, that are new to hunting, that listen to this show.
Yeah, it's the community. It's like kind of what the whole idea of the hunting collective is based around. So
yeah, no, it definitely is important, because it's, you know, to have success on your own is great. A lot of, you know, I love hunting by myself. I probably like it better than hunting with a crew. But man, there's nothing like a deer camp with a bunch of dudes.
There's some folks that hunt solely for the community aspect. I believe they give a shit less about killing a deer.
Yeah. Deer camp is deer camp, you know.
Yeah,
deer camp's got to have a lot of people in it. I love both aspects of it. I've come to, like, if you really want success, sometimes I feel like you gotta strike out on your own. But it can't always be like that.
I've come to realize in my older age, along with my grunts and groans that I now have, that we're so lucky to have this thing that we're so passionate about, and to have then groups that are so passionate about it. Because if you think about it, like, nationally, like, who else has that? Like, name another, like, hobby or lifestyle or sport that, like, can, like, is coalesce the right word?
Yeah,
like,
that's a good word.
Like, so many people will coalesce around it and be so passionate about it. I mean, sure, you have, like, sports teams, but, like, that doesn't get you, like, a bond with a guy, you know, or a gal.
You'd be surprised, Giannis.
You think?
Yes.
Phil's always the non-hunter. He's got video games. He's going to bring up video
tell
games.
Tell me, Phil, what do you think on a national level has, games. Like, the same sort of, like...
Oh, no, I'm just saying sports in particular. It makes... it makes people insane.
It does.
But I totally see what you mean. It's not the same kind of...
I'm a big sport... I'm a huge sports fan. And... Even I've, like, returned to it over the pandemic, and my son is really into football, so, like, that has returned me to it. I took some years off of being, like, a fanatic, but I'm back to being a fanatic, and I love it, dude. Nothing more I love than going out and hunting and going and watching, having that bond with my kid, my dad, my brother. We talk sports all the time, but I've always said that when you hunt with somebody, when I go to, like, trade shows, and the people that I've hunted with in a even in a, like, professional sense, the bond is deeper than the kind of the artificial or superficial sports bond. Now, I'm not, if you play on a team with somebody and you guys, right. You know, that's a different thing. Like, I'm more talking about sports fandom. And also, you know, hunting is more accessible than sports in a way that you can participate in it, because anybody can buy a license. You know, I'm awful at basketball, so I'm probably not going to find many people who want to play with me. And that's not the case. And I know.
I'll play with you,
dude. Ben. I hit a granny shot, like, but I'm good at other sports, just not basketball.
Yeah,
dude,
I like playing with guys like you, because I can whoop up on you. It's an easy win, easy
basketball?
W.
Are you good at basketball? You got the height.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I mean, he's automatically good at basketball.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I can shoot it. I can shoot a basketball. All right, I guess.
Matt, you play basketball?
No.
That's good.
I played football in high school, but that's about it.
Yeah, people from the East Coast would never dare play basketball. I just made that up. That's totally not true. That's totally not true.
I tell people all the time, I was born in southwestern PA, and, you know, that's the place where they've tried to have, like, two professional basketball teams, and they folded because nobody would go to the game. So
that's true. Yeah, I'm from Western Maryland, so we're not too far. We're basically the same guy, so I feel like you feel. Well, thanks,
the community,
man.
I was going to say, the community aspect, I you know, definitely is something that I like about it. That's because that's what I remember from my dad. All of his friends were his hunting buddies. So
yeah, it's a different thing. It really is. I think it might sound a little bit overly dramatic or trite for somebody that doesn't know what it is. Maybe like Phil. Phil doesn't understand. Phil thinks we have a bond now. He knows that we're best friends now. Wait till we hunt together. Wait till the emotions you're going to feel when we are standing over a dead turkey together.
Weeping.
Crying.
In each other's arms.
Sure. Moving in together. Whatever. Uh-huh. It's fine. It's all fine. Well, Matt, thank you, brother, for everything, and keep us updated on how it goes out there.
Thank you very much. And I'll make sure to do that. And I'll, you know, try to write in the future. You've had some great conversations recently. I really appreciate what you guys are doing out there.
Well, thanks, Matt. We'll keep it up and keep that. Yeah. Keep the email inbox, man. The email inbox keeps me sane, as I've said, on a daily basis. So keep firing away.
All right. Y'all have a good day.
Thanks,
Matt.
See ya.
I'm so excited for the Rotel dip.
My neighbor used to make that shit, and it was good the first, like, when it was warm, but then
if you ate it 2 days in a row, you'd be like,
you would die.
Screw this.
You would die.
But, like, once a year, I'll put the hammer on it.
Eric Hall knew about it. I'm not sure. Eric Hall!
How you doing?
What's going on, man?
Let's ask Eric what he knows about Rotel dip.
You know anything about Rotel dip?
Rotel tomatoes.
Yep.
Yeah. Do you know anything about, like, you guys ever have Super Bowl parties over there at the Hall household?
No, but I made sausage dip with Rotel tomatoes.
There it is.
And processed cheese, correct?
I usually use cream cheese and then a jar of the queso.
There it is.
Quesadilla.
Yeah, I saw that variation too. Some people, if you don't want to go the Velveeta route, you can go like half shredded cheddar and half cream cheese, and you'll end up with a similar result. But yeah, some people call it Rotel dip, but yeah, sounds like you could call it sausage dip too.
I call it sausage dip. I use bear sausage. Last time I used bear sausage.
That's what I'm getting inspired for football. I was going to make like healthy things, but now I feel like I got to make this dip.
All right. I told you just a second ago, I was going to ask you this question later, but okay. Now I want to hear what Eric's got to say about it too.
Okay. This is the Eagle asks.
Who are you picking for the Super Bowl?
For the Super Bowl? You know, I will also admit that I did a little betting on this Super Bowl.
Nice.
I gave
a little? Tell me.
I gave myself $150 at the beginning of the playoffs.
All right.
And I just was betting along each game. And yes. I still have all my money left.
Now, are these like digital bets, or are you betting with buddies here in town?
Here in Montana, you can just go to like a little kiosk, put your little bet in there. And so it's completely legal, Phil. I know what you're thinking. It's a completely legal thing that I'm admitting to here.
No, nobody asked, Ben. You seem a little defensive.
Okay, where are you at now? You had 150. Where are you at?
177.
Nice.
And so if I win my bets, I bet on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to win. So if I win my bets, I double my money.
Do you want them to win, or are you just betting on them?
I do. I'm a Tom Brady fan.
Oh, God.
Is that bad?
Oh, my stomach just turned over.
He's a 43-year-old man. He looks like he's 25.
Great.
He's drinking from the fountain of youth.
Good for him.
Have you ever seen like...
Ben's a Tom Brady fan because he sees what he wants to be.
Yeah. Have you ever seen like a picture of Terry Bradshaw when he was 43?
He looks exactly the same as he does now.
Yeah, he looks awful. Tom Brady looks like he looks like an 18-year-old boy. Something's going on. I think he might have sold his soul, is what I think. But I'm betting on the man.
And Ben respects that.
I respect that. I'm betting on the man that can defy time and defy age, because I think he might have other tricks up his sleeve. But I will admit to have betting against the Chiefs multiple times and lost each time.
Mm.
But I don't put a lot on it. Because the Chiefs are good.
I'm just hoping that it's going to be an exciting Super Bowl.
Me too.
A good one to watch. That's all. I only watch like one, maybe two football games these days. But Eric, who are you picking?
I'm going to have to go with the Buccaneers.
That a baby.
I'm going to see if he can do it without Belichick.
Yeah, I like it. It's bad. It's like not real smart to bet against the Chiefs, I think. But I'm doing it. And I like where your head's at. Tom Brady is something different about Tom Brady. Look at his face. Just look at his face. They put a picture of like George Blanda when he was 43. He just looks like he's 80. So I think there's something going on.
Yeah, he and I are similar in age, and I certainly look a little bit older.
Yeah.
But I don't color my hair.
You think he colors his hair?
I don't know. If you're in your early 40s, man, like a little bit of gray, it's pretty normal.
True. But not for Tom Brady. I mean, just look at him. Just look at him.
All right, Eric, what's your question?
Look at it. Like, look at him in the combine when he was like in his 20s. He looked older when he was 20 than he does right now. I think he might have the Benjamin Button thing going on.
Oh, it's almost as if he has a full-time nutritionist and probably plastic surgeon and
I heard that he spends $1 million.
Personal trainers. Yeah.
I heard he spends $1 million a year on his health.
Yes.
Eric, I want to gauge the type of man you are. If it was hunting season and you had a good hunt on this upcoming Sunday, like a good sit for a deer or a bear or whatever you're into, would you skip the Super Bowl to go hunting?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You too, Ben?
Silly. Of course.
Yeah, I guess now you just DVR it and watch it later,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, of course. No, the cool thing about football is that you can just start watching in the playoffs – and like most of hunting is over. So it's kind of like a nice little thing you can do. So yeah, no, there's lots of football during hunting season, which I never see.
Yeah.
Because I'm doing other things. But yes.
Well, lots of folks leave the deer stand to go catch their, you know, the home team playing. Like Doug says, the best day to go hunt your neighbors in Wisconsin is when the Packers are playing.
Yeah.
You know what would really be fun? And I know they do it in Minnesota. They pull those ice chains out there and they watch the Super Bowl on the lake while they fish.
They're ice shanties.
Oh, yep.
Yeah. I would do that. Yeah, they get a little generator, put a little TV on. I'd do it. I'd be into it. But no, I enjoy this, like, this time of year is kind of off time, right? You can, around here, you can go chase mountain lions or ice fish, or there's a lot of stuff to do outside, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not as pressing as like elk. And I don't mind on a nice Sunday if I get up and go locally for an elk season. If it's quiet at noon, I don't mind going to catch a football game, coming back, you know, a little bit later on, taking a little break, watch a little football. I don't mind doing that on a Sunday. So I'm not against it, but I would never, ever pick football over hunting, no matter what.
Good.
There's no scenario. So, Eric, do you have a question? I like to let you freestyle. I didn't even ask you for any questions. But you have anything? It doesn't even have to be a question about. It just be anything that you want to talk about.
What did you have for breakfast this morning, Eric?
Oh yeah.
Oh, you're gonna get me, man. I actually stopped at Bojangles.
You stopped at Bojangles,
dude. I love Bojangles. Love it. I
stopped at Bojangles on the way home from work.
I've never had Bojangles. Is that like an Eastern
gravy and those fries?
Sausage, gravy, and fries. I've never had a Bojangles, I don't think. I know what it is, right? It's like
is that
chicken.
An East Coast chain?
It's like a chicken place, yeah?
Yeah, chicken and biscuits.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, chicken and biscuits.
Yeah. But it's like a Chick-fil-A, except much greasier and, in my opinion, tastier for that reason.
Yeah, I'm not crazy for the biscuits. They put too much butter on in there. I mean, you just have to have a towel to eat your greasy biscuits.
Sounds great.
Our listeners, man, well, this is the third or fourth caller we've had. Everybody's had an amazing breakfast, man. I had like an orange, and I just feel like one of them little clementines.
Special K with red berries over here.
Yeah, that's what my child ate this morning.
Yeah, it's sweeter than I want it to be, but I still eat it.
Yeah, everybody, I'm impressed with everybody's breakfast choices. I'm hungry now too. But there's no Bojangles in Bozeman though.
No, there? No, sir,
nothing. What else you want to talk about, Eric Hall? What do you want to ask Giannis? He's here. He's virile.
I'm into hammock camping here a little bit in the last year. But and I don't get out far away from the house, you know, and stay for days. But I know Giannis does sometimes, so y'all more in the backcountry stuff. What item do you carry, and have you ever got called out and had to stay out overnight, and what item do you specifically put in your pack thinking I may have to stay overnight?
You know, I've never been caught out. I've stayed out kind of on purpose, really, really late. And by the time you get back, you might as well have called it staying out. Like one time we had the hike was just long enough and we had to wait just long enough on this blood trail. Cause we had like a suspected, you know, bad hit. That we just kind of decided to take a nap. I think we woke up around midnight and then followed this blood trail and found this elk and then chopped it up and, you know, got back to camp, whatever. It was like, you know, guys were going to get up in like the next hour or two, you know. But these days, I think the only thing I have like a little backcountry organizer kit that weighs probably a pound. It's got my what we call like a kill kit in it. You know, I got a zip tie to attach a tag and maybe some, you know, P cord, which has multiple uses, obviously. And, you know, backup knife, backup headlamp in it. My teepee or, you know, baby wipe stash is always in there. And it's certainly got fire starter, which I think if one thing you always want to make sure you have is like a very easy way to start a fire. And to me, that's more than just carrying around a Bic lighter.
Yeah.
I have these little things. I got them at the REI. It's actually meant to be a like a fuel for a stove. I think it's called Esbit. Hmm. And they're like, it's a little white piece of some kind of fuel. It's hard, but you can light that thing and it'll sit there and burn for 10 or 15 minutes. And if you can't get a fire going with that, then either you're kind of hosed or you don't have, you know, any kind of fire building skills, you know? But, I don't know. I don't really, otherwise I don't carry like a shelter all the time. I do like to think about, you know, what the weather is going to be in the next 24 hours. And
yeah,
if it's going to get nasty, I like to have some rain gear with me.
Well, before we go, Phil the engineer, he just let out a big yawn. He's clearly not into it. Eric, do you want to tell anything about Phil? I mean, I feel like Phil's turkey hunt is it's like 2 months away now, 2.5 months away. And
it's planned for real.
It's happening.
It's happening.
Yep.
Which state?
That's good.
It's going to happen in Montana.
Okay.
Phil requested a local hunt.
Okay.
And so I've set up, I haven't even really told him this yet, but I've set up a hunt up near Whitefish. It's a bit of a drive, but there's lots of turkeys. It is private land, and we should be able to do this. We'll see if that's my first option. I have other options around, so I don't want to pigeonhole us into that one option, but there's lots of turkeys there. It's private ground. We'll be able to get on them. It's a nice little day hunt, and if Phil wants to sleep in a hammock or something, we can do that. But I think we're going to have lots of action and lots of learning opportunities. And Giannis, you should definitely come with us for Phil's first range time whenever it gets nice, and we can start to, you know, early March probably when we start to really dial in, and then we could have a little calling session maybe. You can even do it here in the podcast. So, but I want to let Eric. You know, you got any questions for Phil as he barrels forward into his hunting future? Probably, you know, will definitely change his life. We just don't know how.
Yeah, I heard him saying that before, but I guess that his number wasn't real high, but maybe, you know, maybe it will be after his first time. So we're just rooting that that after his first time, he's going to like it and want to go back, and maybe eventually go by himself, you know. So that's the main goal. Get Phil out there and see if he likes it.
See if he likes it.
Yeah. I mean, I've said it before, Eric. I'll say it again. It's Giannis and it's Eric who are the fire behind me.
I'm more of a Ben, traction.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Ben's a wet blanket over my fire.
Yep. Yeah. That's true. It is true. I could see it in his eyes whenever Giannis is like, come on, Phil, start hunting. And he perks up a little bit. He seems a little more serious. When I'm like, come on, Phil, get your thing done. And it's like when you're talking to your kid and you know, like, you telling him to do something is going to make him not want
to
do it.
Even. I think you just have to do some reverse psychology, Ben.
Yeah. If, like, I don't want you to come
exactly,
with me.
Like,
I'm going to waste my time with some
You wouldn't be able to do it anyway.
Some engineer, you know, that doesn't even know anything about hunting.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Is that working?
Yep, it kind of is.
All right, cool.
Thanks, Eric.
Thank you, Eric Hall. I expect that you'll be giving your opinion or at least your writing skills to the theme song. Are you going to do it?
I will not. I am not a fan.
All right. As a man, stand your ground. Stand your ground, Eric Hall. All right. We'll go forward without you. We'll go forward without you. All right, well.
I'll be listening.
We know that.
I thought we were going to be submitting.
I love it. All right, man. Well, thank you. It's good to talk to you. Keep on keeping on it there.
Yeah, thanks for your time, Eric. Always a pleasure.
All right, y'all take care.
See ya. Okay, Giannis, I feel like Ask the Eagle is a hit, man. We talk about this every time, but I feel like we got to get Eric Hall in here. Eric Hall sometimes brings the energy. Other times is a little more sedated. This time, I think he was full of Bojangles, French fries, and gravy.
Yeah, that'll do it to you.
I'd be ready for a nap.
That'll do.
I've never had that meal there, but yeah. I'm gonna try it next time I'm in North Carolina. Hopefully this summer, man. God, I haven't been in 3 years.
Really?
Yeah, because either work or my house or
global pandemics. Yeah. Yep. I'm kind of got a craving for all kind of stuff after what we heard from our folks in the breakfast scenario, like cinnamon buns, bacon, French fries, gravy. Boy, oh boy.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, Ask the Eagle is my favorite thing to do because we just talk to people that we really like to talk to. So thank you to Mike, Matt, Eric. But what's the next thing you're excited about? You're gonna go
lion hunting with old Mingus?
Oh, yeah. Yeah? I've been trying to make it out 2 days a week while I'm home.
And he's at least treed one lion, I know.
Hasn't treed himself.
No, he has been a party to.
He's been, he's been at a couple trees with lions in them.
Okay.
But, we keep trying. We're keeping after it. But Steve and I are going down to hang out with Clay Newcomb.
Yeah, he was telling me.
In about 10 days, hunt squirrels behind his feist.
Maybe a little coon hunting.
And then hunt coons behind his plots. And I'm bringing Mingus down.
Oh, you are.
For that to get him on some coon
Mingus
action.
Mingus has got some good experience in his young hunting dog life. He's hadn't been around some good hunting dogs, though.
He has. He has, for sure. I just know that there's a lot of dogs that at his age have done a lot more.
Okay. Well, before we go, Giannis, I'll give you this opportunity to speak with Phil about his turkey hunting. Because, again, what I say has little to no effect, if not a negative effect. So now that him and I have talked about kind of like the NRA gun safety rules, we've talked about that. We haven't talked about kind of turkeys yet or calling turkeys. We'll get into that later. We got plenty of time, I feel, at least a month or so to get through that. But do you have anything you want to say to Phil? He's perking up right now as we speak.
I think Phil should know, and this will help Phil keep you fired up throughout this process and get through the next. Because right now, for me, the next 2 months are just like I'm buzzing with anticipation because it's coming. It's coming. We're going to hear a gobble soon and we'll be in those beautiful spring turkey woods. But for you, it means nothing. But what you should know is that when it's all said and done, Ben calls in a turkey and you shoot him, because I'm sure that's going to happen.
Oh, it's going to.
You are going to have two breasts and two thighs and two legs.
Plump breasts.
Some of the finest eating out there. So good if you do it right. The breasts, you almost can't mess up.
I mean, you
can cook them anyway, and your kids, if they don't like it, something's wrong with them.
Yep.
I'm not joking.
Kids are weird.
I'm not joking there. Like, it is so good. Like, there's a lot of times, even with I cook an elk or something, and my kids are kind of like, eh. But they have never given me an ant about turkey meat.
Smoked, honey glazed. Just come on, man.
Yeah.
Just come on. I like turkey cordon bleu is my favorite thing in the world.
Schnitzel is ours.
Schnitzel is wonderful. Anything you do with a chicken, you can do with a turkey. That's a new t-shirt we're making. Anything you do with a damn chicken, you can do with a turkey.
Yep. Except when you're eating it, you have to tell a story about how Ben called it in.
Turkey parmesan. Right? What's your favorite meal that includes a white meat, Phil?
I mean, is it like wrong to say fried chicken?
No, it's not wrong. Fried turkey.
No, because basically schnitzel is pounded fried turkey. And if you don't want to go through the process of pounding it, you can just do what we call turkey nuggets.
Yeah, turkey nuggets are, oh my gosh. Now I can't take it. Dude, I can't take it. I'm tingling.
Well, I told you this. I was blind, and then I went to the NWTF conference last year.
Yep.
I had no idea. I had no idea it was such a big deal.
No idea. I've been trying to tell you. I gave you a book that I don't know if you've read it yet.
I haven't yet. I will before we go, though.
You read The Tenth Legion.
It's like a full-on sickness. I mean, they say that about a lot of outdoor passions and activities, you know, fishing and hunting in general, but the turkeys just really, really grab you.
I mean, it is. A part of it, I know this to be true. A big part of it is the anticipation. And because we have like a doldrums, we're currently in the hunting doldrums, at least in where we live. And then everything comes to life. And you're just like so happy to be out of the doldrums. And then you hear the turkey gobble and it's just.
But I think the hook has more to do in the beginning with like. I haven't met anybody, especially adult onset hunters, who go into it with anything other than a like, it's a turkey. He has a brain the size of a pea. How hard could it be? And then you go out there and you have like just enough success, like calling and talking to one, and you're like feeling like you're going to have a dead turkey. And then he just walks away.
Yeah.
And then it happens again. Yeah. And it's just like, it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. And like, that's what's got my wife. She's like getting to be, someone once said it, Parker Hall, I think, said that his mom his mom. Parker Hall is a grown man, you know, of my age, roughly. And he said his dad had hunted him his whole life, and it wasn't until they retired and started doing like the annual. They do an annual. Parker Hall's parents start in Florida in late March and then drive an RV some direction north and west, and somewhere around the end of May, they quit hunting turkeys.
I can't wait to retire.
And he's like, his dad kind of has like a very casual attitude about it and, you know, spends a lot of time reading, hanging out. His mom, he said, is mad at the turkeys and kills and tries to kill a lot of gobblers.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's kind of, and at first I was like, that's kind of weird to say someone's mad at the turkeys. And I think what they're trying to say is that like, you have become so hooked and you are like so sort of like entrenched in this like battle of wits with this bird that should not really have like,
yeah,
you be at the same wit level as you, yet you, there you are and you're like engaging with him and you can't stop it.
And here's the thing. The bird has only his natural instincts to fight back. That's all he has. We have a little mechanical box that can
don't say fight because he's not fighting
to avoid to evade us.
Mm-hmm.
Yet we have a little box that we can see the entire world on from mm-hmm. any level. We can zoom out to a world, the planet view, and zoom in to the tree that he's in. And we have fake, you know, plastic, sometimes real feathers on decoys.
Mm-hmm.
We have constructed all kinds of devices to make the noises that they make. And yet sometimes none of that can do anything. We have driving a...
You'd think that the odds are in your favor.
We created the printing press and the combustion engine, but sometimes the turkey just beats us. And that's what you needed. I had a nemesis bird here locally last year, and it was like the coolest thing. I hated it during the whole thing. It was embarrassing to get beaten every time I went. But boy, this year, I could see that turkey's little face. Just...
Oh, there's nothing that'll get you out of bed at 3:30 in the morning than to have a nemesis bird.
Oh, it just is...
Phil, I'll tell you this. This is the end of it. I feel like we're getting long-winded here. We need to wrap it up.
I can't even talk.
There's a lot of passion, I can tell.
We need to wrap it up. But like my good friend Scotty Justice says, there are a lot of things in life that you can be late for. Turkey hunting's not one of them.
That's right.
So when Ben says get up and be there at 3:45.
You get up and you be there.
Yeah, because you got to be waiting on him before Tom wakes up.
That's right. Any last words, Phil?
Can't wait.
See ya! That's it. That's all. Another episode in the books. Thanks to Giannis Patelis. Thanks to all of you that emailed in and we called and you answered the phone and you were in for another Ask the Eagle. Like I said, before we got started, this is one of my favorite things. And Phil, guess who got his prediction right on the Super Bowl?
Ben O'Brien?
That's right. That's right. Just another reason why I might get out of the hunting industry and just join the gambling world. I think it might be smart. Anyway, the email came in from Thad L. He said, good afternoon, Ben and Phil. And this is like the most desperate email I think we've ever received. Please, 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 please film Phil's first turkey hunt. The long road all your fans have had to endure and during the COVID shutdown and the anticipation for Phil's first hunting experience, it must be seen. Phil, I wanted to run this by you because I know it has been a long road and pretty soon we're going to start buying our tags and we're going to start announcing dates. We're going to start filling everybody in on what they can look forward to in the spring season here at THC. Lots going on. But are you okay with being filmed?
Yeah, of course. I'm just here to make this show as good as it can be. I mean, would I prefer to not be filmed? Well, yeah, obviously. you know, Maggie up in production, Tracy on the other side of the building were filmed for the Meat Eater television show for their very first hunt. And right. I think both of them would have preferred not to be. But, you know, I'm doing it for you, Ben. This is all for you.
Thanks, brother.
So,
thank you.
And you know, honestly, it might be fun. Who's
it could
to say?
But let me just say this to you, Phil. Let me say this.
And I am serious about this. If we film this, even on my phone, and anybody talks shit about Phil, I'm coming for you. Okay? I'm like probably going to send you a series of mean emojis or something on the internet, because I will protect Phil from all the slings and arrows of the internet. I won't have it. This is a warning out there to everybody. I won't have you talking about Phil that way. Okay? He didn't miss that turkey on purpose. I'm just practicing what I'm going to say. He didn't miss those okay. three turkeys on purpose. He was trying his best.
He didn't trip over that branch and cut his face open on purpose.
No, he was trying his best. He gets a participation trophy from me. I'm going to make.
Yep.
Anyway, well, stop talking about Phil.
Ben, because this isn't, it's not like precious.
Leave him alone. Sorry. Continue. I'm all fired up now.
I know.
I'm hypothetically fired up on your behalf.
I'm done. Point all the cameras at me and let the internet judge me. I don't care.
Stay away from Phil. Bastards. Anyway, I think we will. We will film it, at least for social media. Not some sort of posterity here for this long-awaited journey of PTE, Phil the Engineer. So, just stay away from him. Stay away from him. The only thing you're allowed to do with him is play video games, and that's it.
Thank you, Ben.
Do you still play video games with that guy?
Sometimes. Here's the thing, Ben. This season of Destiny has been kind of slow lately, but guess what? Tomorrow, or today, as this podcast is airing, the new season of Destiny 2 starts, so I'm sure I'll be on more often. I'll be playing with
Destiny 2.
Yep.
Is that a first-person shooter game?
It is. Wow, look at you using the lingo.
Yeah.
So proud of you.
Will it help you with shooting turkeys, you think?
I think the skills are directly transferable.
I'm hoping so.
Because I was wondering why I even had to take Hunter safety, since I've been shooting guns on a TV screen since I was like 7. So I don't
know. The old CV.
I don't know.
Okay. All right. Put it on the resume.
Yeah.
All right. Well, again, we're gonna announce real soon here. We got a lot to do, but we need to raise money for turkeys. So go to Cameo. It's an app. It's a website. Type in the search bar Ben O'Brien, and I will pop up. And you can buy a chance for us to make a video for you and your family, your friends, whomever, $50 a pop. Every single dollar that we earn is going to go to the NWTF. Every single red cent that we earn is going to the NWTF. Phil says like we can't do it, but I would really love 200 of you to be so kind and generous as to do this for us and help us raise 10 grand. I know it's a lot to ask in a pandemic. I know $50 doesn't grow on trees, but I promise we will make it worth your while, and we will send that money to a really good cause. So that's my plea. As Ranelle always says, I'm begging and pleading, but I hope it's for the best for turkeys and for Phil and all you new hunters out there. So we'll see you next week. Say bye, Phil.
Bye. Too long, 'cause I can't go a week without doing wrong. Oh, without doing wrong.